decided to call these three cassette series History of Greek-American Monasticism, and we hope that this title does not offend any of our Orthodox brothers and sisters. We do realize that there are other monasteries, there are other monastic communities in this country, and we are not attempting to take anything away from them. However, as members of the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese, we can boast in the Lord about the 10-some monasteries that have been established by the leadership of Father Ephrem. Father Ephrem was the youngest spiritual son of Father Joseph the Hesychast. The first monastery was established in Saxonburg, Pennsylvania, under our Bishop Maximus over 6 years ago, I believe. The rest of the monasteries followed a few years later, within a few months of each other. The grace and holiness of Papu Yosef and the complete obedience of his spiritual son, Yolanda Ephrem, have been instrumental in bringing forth this great miracle of God's grace. And we continue now with the teachings of the grandfather of Greek-American monasticism. As we were saying last week, Father Yosef was talking about divine fear. Divine fear gives birth to zeal. Zeal gives birth to the desire for the accuracy of the conscience, meaning the precise keeping of the commandments. And once this happens, sin cannot approach. It does not find place to hold on onto the human soul. After this point, it is simply a matter of grace. And we mentioned that a monk needs to be careful not to judge other people's actions, and it is very important that this is avoided at all costs. Silence is also necessary, because the mysteries of God are revealed through silence. Even though King David in the Old Testament was a king, a general, a judge, and a family man, he also found quiet time to discover inside of him the inner word to connect with grace. For the monks, this is the main duty. Our Yolanda was something else. We are awestruck when we think of his prayer rule. He managed to immerse himself in the Jesus prayer for 6 hours every night, keeping his nous in the heart. After this struggle, he would come out soaked in sweat and exhausted. It takes a great struggle to hold the nous in the heart. His entire life, his entire purpose was this keeping of the nous. And this was the life of our Yolanda Yosef. This is what St. Anthony answered the visiting philosophers. When they asked him, "What do you monks do more than us?" St. Anthony replied with a very powerful statement. "We keep our nous, nun dirumen," meaning our mind is always kept on God. We pray incessantly. The philosopher said, "This we cannot do." This is the work of the monk, the discipline of the nous, to submit the nous, to hold it in constant prayer, to not let it escape. This work is called noetic, from the Greek word nous. The nous is the central part of the spirituality. The rest is secondary, only forms. Our Yolanda started out with great zeal. God provides people like Yolanda in every generation. He does this to show us that the gospel, the reaching of perfection, can take place even in our days. Christ is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. This is so encouraging to see that holiness can be achieved even in our days. In the beginning, our Yolanda chose a life of strict isihia, and this is why he's called an Hesychast. He did not come out to join the brothers in Mount Athos. He chose to stay inside even during some feast days or even on Sundays. Unfortunately, some members of the brotherhood misinterpreted his actions and went as far as to consider him deluded because he did not follow the standard tradition of the Holy Mountain. He found a protruding rock and built around it a hut, a sort of a cave, using some wooden planks. He used to stay in there, occupying his time working on his inner self. He set his alarm clock 6 hours later, so he wouldn't lose track of time while praying. On a certain year, on a day of Epiphany, he did not go to the feast, so he set his clock and he started to hold his mind in his heart, which is the method of the prayer. After praying for a few minutes, the entire place became radiant, full with uncreated light. This was not new to him. He had this experience before many times, as many of the spiritual people do. The light became even brighter, and Yananda was beyond himself. He did not know if he was in the body or not. He did not feel his body. The law of gravity is pushed aside in these situations. And instantly appeared in front of him three small children, three angelic babies. They were so identical that he was questioning himself, now, are there three or one? Their movement were identical, and they marched in front of him like little soldiers. They never turned their back, and they were chanting, those that have been baptized in Christ have put on Christ, alleluia. They chanted this over and over again, and they were coming about a yard away from him, and then they would walk backwards, chanting again. This went on for a very long time until the light disappeared, and they went along with it. We asked him, Yananda, what were you thinking? What was going through your mind? And he said, I was bewildered and amazed. And in those situations, the mind cannot really think. I couldn't think much, except the question came to my mind. How did they know how to chant since they were so little? At times, he secluded himself for extensive periods of time. He exercised absolute seclusion, and he did not go to liturgies. 3 months went by, and he did not receive Holy Communion. He was feeling very badly at the time, and he was really remorseful. And he said to himself, you wretched man, you are unworthy of Holy Communion. You have so many sins. You are not worthy. You are horrible. All the fathers will partake of the immaculate mysteries, but you are worthless and useless. In thinking like this, he fell into a state of mourning, or a state of holy benthos. And while grieving like this, the Yananda remembers, the place suddenly became full of a bright light. The roof opened up, and a bright young man came in from above. He had wings on, and he stood in front of me. I could barely see him. His face was much like lightning. He put his hand inside his clothing and took out a fabulous small box, round and radiant, full of light. He opened it, took out a portion of the bread that was inside and placed it in my mouth, and after this, he closed the box and left. He looked at me, smiled, and vanished. For one entire week, I had no memory of food, drink, or that I even had a body, or that there was a world out there. I was in another world. These are things that the people of Nipsis, the spiritual people who dare to work on their inner self, these are the type of things that they experience. He saw Our Lady, the Theotokos, many times. She talked to him a great number of times. She told him, keep your hope in me and do not be afraid. The Yananda at the time, and this is significant, the Yananda was abandoned. He was alone. there was no one known at the time who practiced in this fashion. At least no one taught like this. The other fathers in Mount Athos had no understanding about these things. Praying for 6 hours and being unclothed, they considered these practices delusion. You could not explain these things to them. Some fathers who were pious refused to encourage this practice because they themselves were not experienced. They thought that these practices are dangerous and best to be avoided. The Yanda, however, persisted in his spiritual endeavors. He was not convinced. He thought, our Lord called us, and he gave so much grace to our Holy Church fathers. Now, why can't we find some of this grace? He did not back down. He persisted in the idea of divine fear and the general form of loving to share in the sufferings, or philoponia. And philoponia he practiced. He was austere. For 8 years, he sat on a small wooden bench. Day and night, he never laid down to sleep. He never used a bed in 8 years. He slept sitting on this skamni, or wooden bench. He did this for 8 years because he was young and new at this. He was in battle. He was attacked with the spirit of the flesh. Even though he was a very pure man, very innocent, a virgin by the full meaning of the word, neither did he ever see a naked body. He was extremely pure. However, the spirit of the flesh bothered him with intensity and for a long time. So he had to fight this. He had to fight this evil spirit with a tactic of philoponia, self-induced suffering. He went through this stage of great temptation for years, and at the end, he totally defeated this demon. He became so dead to the flesh, he mortified the spirit of the flesh to the point where he could not distinguish genders. He could look at everyone as a child of God, as an image of God, not noticing or recognizing if they are male or female. He did not notice the difference of genders. He was able to share some of these perceptions with a spiritual man who lived in the cave of St. Peter the Athonite. St. Peter the Athonite lived in this cave during the 8th century, and in this spot, the monastery of Lavra built a small cell and a church. In our times, there was a Yeranda residing at this spot, and his name was Daniel. Father Daniel was a priest monk, and he was a Niptic, a Noetic father. He had theoria, or the experience of divine contemplation. He never talked, however, and he did not give advice. He celebrated divine liturgy at midnight. The schedule which we kept when we were together with a Yeranda, we had taken from him. He held vigil until midnight, praying with the Komposchini, and after midnight, he started the divine liturgy. Because he felt the spirituality of Yeranda Yosef and Yeranda Arsenio, he accepted them to come to his divine liturgies. He allowed them to attend, and they benefited greatly from the old Father Daniel, who celebrated the liturgy for 4 hours at times. He could hardly recite the prayers. He often had to stop. He was stopped from the tears and the cry of compunction. He used to strengthen them, and sometimes they would be there at midnight to confess their thoughts. They told him what was on their mind, their logismi. However, Father Daniel never gave any answers. He did not advise them or respond to any of their questions. He just prayed. But this was enough consolation for Yeranda Yosef and Father Arsenio. It was enough just to look at him. They received their prayer schedule from him. They always kept it. When we got there, Father Daniel was gone. Father Arsenios was a refugee from Asia Minor, and after the war of 1922, his family took off to southern Russia. Father Karalambos was born in Russia, and later on, however, they left with their sister to come to Greece to work with the nipsis and the inner prayer. They were taught these things from a very young age from a pious woman, but especially from their grandfathers who were priests and also niptics. There was a great number of niptics back then. We have to keep in mind that the cradle of our race is not necessarily Peloponnesus, but Asia Minor and Cappadocia. Asia Minor was Greek. 32 million Greeks lived in modern-day Turkey, and they were slowly pushed out by the Turks. This great tradition was destroyed. So Father Arsenius left from Russia and went to the Holy Land in Palestine, and he stayed for a while, but he did not find strong spirituality there. And times were kind of tough in that region, so he left and came to the Holy Mountain and became a monk at the Iriorhythmic Monastery of Stavronikita. From there, he heard about Yeronda Yosef, who lived in the area of Lavra, and he went to meet him. After this, they agreed to stay together. For 8 years, they had nothing. They started from small Agia Anna from Katunakia. There was the small church of Annunciation, the only church in Katunakia. And this church is very small, enough to hold 3-4 people. There, Yeronda Yosef met Grandfather Ephrem. Then they went to this area of St. Basil, and they erected some huts. They used these huts, which were more like chicken coops, in the wintertime, because the entire summer they traveled on foot. They asked the Russian monks to give them a thick overcoat, and they used it as a mattress. They had a carrying bag and a small aluminum pot or bronze, and they walked like this all over Mount Athos. They would visit the holy sites and the abodes of previous holy ascetics. They would go to the cell of St. Gregory Palamas above the Lavra. They would go to the spot of St. Maximus the hut burner, or St. Acacius the hut burner. All summer they would walk and live as hermits. They would pick some greens from the earth, commonly called horta, and they would put them in a little pot and eat. They used to weave some small brooms from brushes, and they placed them in front of the doors of the monasteries, getting some dried bread in return, or paximadia. The leftover bread of the large monasteries, leftovers from the meals, were never thrown away. They were baked in the ovens to keep them from spoiling, and these dried pieces were left in a barrel outside of monastery gate. This was a great practice because the hermits of Mount Athos would pass and take their needed supply of bread. Our Yerandes did not want to take this bread for free, so they made small brooms and left them next to these containers. And after this sort of payment, they would fill up their bags with bread, which would sustain them, and when they ran out, they repeated this process all over again. In the wintertime, it was very cold, so they would stay in their huts until March. From March until October, they would travel from place to place once again. They had nothing. They had no property to speak of. In a minor detail, when they traveled, Yeronda Yosef had Yeronda Arsenio walk ahead of him or behind him about 100 feet to avoid any type of unnecessary or idle talk. They were in constant prayer. They always kept vigil, praying all night long. In the morning hours, they would rest somewhat, and they lived like this for 8 years. After the 8 years, they decided to stay at one spot at St. Basil, a very steep and precipitous place, very high in the mountain, about 3,000 feet above sea level. All the supplies were brought up this mountain on foot, and this became very difficult as the number of brothers grew. After this, they decided to come a little lower to the caves of St. Anna, and that's where we found them. And after 1953, we left these caves and we came to the area of New Skeet. One time, I remember myself and Ephrem, Haralambos did not come as of yet, And we need to mention that the Girondins did some special fasts above and beyond what the church has. To abstain from bread for an entire month, for example, they would boil some beans only and live on them. On other occasions, they ate only bread while fasting from everything else. They fasted in this manner. During Great Lent, fasting was austere. I remember myself and a friend asking them for their blessing to do like they did, to imitate them. Gerda Joseph said, "You are not ready for this. You cannot do this." We kept insisting, and finally our Yeranda agreed to let us follow their rule fasting during this great Lenten season. The menu was 25 grams of white flour, and in our terms, this translates to about 3 ounces of flour at the ninth hour, or at 3 p.m. At 3 p.m., Father Arsenius would measure out for us using the scale 3 ounces of flour in an empty can. We would mix it with water and boil it, and this was our meal. We made it up until the fifth week. After that, Ephraim and I could not wake up. Arsenius ran to Yeranda one morning and told him, "Yeranda, the boys are sick. They're still sleeping." The Yeranda knew. He smiled and he said, "Father Arsenio, they're not sick. Give them bread. Feed them." And after this, we were able to get up. They kept this fast the entire Lent until Easter. Father Arsenio's was Father Haralambos' uncle. Father Haralambos is now the abbot of the monastery of Dionysiu. Father Arsenios was extremely strong and healthy and lived many, many years. We used to admire his endurance. He exposed himself to extreme pain and struggle. He used to work extremely hard, hard labor, even during this austere fasting. We were young at the time, and we could never keep up with him. I remember one time, he was about 70 years old, and we had to transfer supplies up the mountain to the caves where we lived. The path was very steep and rocky. From the sea where St. Anna is to our destination was about 1,200 feet. I was able to carry a sack weighing about 150 pounds. I carried this on my back to our caves with great difficulty. Father Arsenius, at the age of 70, was carrying a sack weighing about 190 pounds. I was exhausted. I barely made it. Father Arsenius kept walking. No trouble at all. The important thing here is the entire meaning. The meaning of this entire talk is the understanding of this concept of philoponia. And I hope I don't tire you out being so redundant. The important thing is to understand the love of pain and this Christian philoponia, to welcome the suffering for the love of Christ. To the monk, this is everything. Without philoponia, everything else is meaningless. When the monk abides in a state of platysmo, the opposite of the narrow path, when a monk lives in a relative state of comfort, well, he lost his way. He lost his purpose, and he has no hope. The Yeranda was extremely tough on himself. He was very austere. What was really surprising, however, was the discretion and wisdom of the Yeranda. He did not impose the same rule or the same fasting rule on everyone around him. For instance, Ephraim is 7 years younger than I, and he's now at Philotheu. And he was ill quite often. He was very sickly, and I was amazed to see the economy used by Yeranda. Even though Yeranda was extremely austere with himself, he was sensitive to the other person's weakness. I remember him allowing Ephraim to use olive oil for months. He allowed him to use olive oil and wine even at periods and times of fasting, only because Father Ephraim had a health problem and his body was prone to illnesses. He insisted on severe ascesis and philoponia, however, when one was healthy and capable. We must also mention that noetic prayer is also a gift, a talent, and it is not absolute. Not everyone can reach the same level. We see this type of thing in the life of Saint Pachomius, who was extremely austere, and he insisted and demanded that all the monks apply themselves to reach this inner prayer of the heart. And an angel of the Lord appeared and told him, "No, you cannot expect this from everyone. Those that can bear this, the people that can do this, they need no rule. For those that cannot do this, and they cannot fast in this severe manner, they can eat and work to serve the needs of the brothers. Those that want to enter into more fasting and more spiritual endeavors, they can." So we can see that there's a difference in the character and talents of people. There are some characters, personalities, who are extroverts, and they like diakonia, or to do work, to serve, to do different tasks. And they do these quite well. There are other brothers who are more introverted, and they prefer to fast more, to concentrate. They need to do more work on their inner self. They love to study and pray. Everyone, however, can push themselves to reach a level of prayer. But we must understand that this is also a matter of talent. Again, in the biography of Saint Pachomius, we read that his Gieronda Palamon was very austere, very harsh, and Saint Pachomius learned from this Gieronda, and he reached the state of impassion or apathia. After this, he did not know what to do with himself. He reached the state of apathia, and his struggles were over. So he pleaded with God to guide him, to show him what to do next. After much prayer, an angel of the Lord appeared to him and told him that from now on, the will of God is for you to become the vessel by which people will be saved. Then he proceeded to widen and enlarge his place to accept more brothers, and his brother in the flesh reprimanded him and told him, "What is this? What are you doing? Why are you blowing up with pride?" He did not understand him. Father Pachomius grieved so much from this response, so he went to the basement and prayed all night in agony, full of sweat, and the floor of the basement turned into mud. "Lord, you told me that it is your will for me to save people, and here I couldn't bear an insult from my brother. I became angry. Now how can I do this? If you don't take this dragon from inside of me, how am I to govern people?" He prayed like this all night, and God took away from him this passion of anger. After this, his brother also came to understand, and they began to expand. At first, they accepted 200 monks, and not a single priest was among them. The brothers mentioned Gieronda, "We need to have a priest among us for the purpose of Holy Communion." He replied, "We as monks must be very humble. We are not worthy to become priests. The priesthood has great value." So they had a visiting priest come from a nearby village. After this, they expanded to 10 monasteries, and the number of the monks was 11,000. Then an angel of the Lord appeared to him and instructed him about various aspects of monasticism. And the angel was wearing arazo, the proper attire for monks, and he showed them to wear the scufo, or the monastic cap. And the cap had a red cross on it. He also told him how to classify the different types of monks with a letter of the Greek alphabet.